You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
WTCM News Talk 580. Welcome aboard. It is a Thursday. It's about 6 after 10 right now. That means it's time for New Retirement Radio with Prout Financial Design. Joining us today, a big crew headed up by Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
Rock and roll. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. Good morning.
It's crazy. I mean, we got started here a couple minutes early. It's like the weather.
Yeah.
It's due to change, but, you know, I heard Colleen talking about it earlier. Crazy this weekend. 72, 74, 76, 78, pure sun.
Yes.
Chilly at night, though.
We'd better make the best of it, right? Hang on while the hanging's good.
Good sleeping weather at night, and sunshine and warm temps during the day.
That's good. What we like.
Yeah. Great time to see all the grandkids. Going to have all 9 of them up.
Woo.
One's in the, in the oven? Something like that.
What age range?
Let's see, 2 to 12.
Yeah, okay.
12.
Some sleep.
Yeah. You're going to need it, buddy. Well, that's enough of that croquet stuff out there, huh? I'm having a hard time bending over. Where's the ball? You know, all that sort of stuff. Well, we love doing this thing. And if you do have a question of a financial nature, please call us and or text.
Text or the receptus, you know.
You can call or text. It's one number, convenient number, 231 area code, 947-0023.
And my name, of course, is Dennis Prout, CFP, CPWA, and Master Elite Certified Private Wealth Advisor. That too. Master Elite Advisor with Ed Slott. Heidi Cartwright, RICP, Master Elite Advisor, and What's your designation with us there at Prout? I forget.
I'm the executive director.
Executive director, yes. Nathan's a managing director.
That's right.
Everyone's moving
we
up.
We move things around a little bit.
What happened to me? I mean, you know, really. Well, what happened to you is yesterday's news, buddy. Nathan Prout joining us, of course, Master Elite Advisor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
As they talk over everyone, sorry. Trying to hear us. And Beth Shire, our own marketing director of marketing.
Wait. What chair are you in?
Got to make sure they're all working.
Way over there.
Mm-hmm. One of the ones that's still muted.
Say hello again, Beth.
Check 1, 2, 1, 2.
I'm not getting you there.
Yeah.
That's nothing. Say it again.
Hello.
No. Can you try the other chair? I'm sorry. For some reason.
Chair number one does not work.
We're having technical difficulties. Mm-hmm.
Chair number two.
Check. Oh. Hello. Good morning.
Yeah, there she is.
Okay, yeah.
Works. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. We'll put out a call, Batman call, for the left microphone.
I was thinking of sitting here anyways.
Okay.
So
okay, cool.
That way we can see you run.
Yeah. Decision made.
If you are listening to Saturday, on Saturday it is a rebroadcast. When Ron mentioned the time, it's after 9 o'clock, just in case you were confused. Yeah?
Correct.
Now, we have so much to talk about today. We're talking about the economy and options, opportunity. Now, we saw yesterday NVIDIA come out with its earnings.
Yeah.
Like a tiny miss in one estimate. The stock went down by 6 points or 6%, depending on the day of the week. And, right back up here this morning. It's amazing what's going on out there. And we've got, of course, then a lot to talk about. Now, in future, we have talked about this some. We want to talk about aging here on Prout Financial Designs Radio Show. The implications for aging, the responsibilities that we have economically, financially, for ourselves and our spouses or significant others, and then our children. Because the assets that clients are managing are significant these days. Just plain significant. And as we age, we become necessarily, not all the time, but sometimes we need help. And we're going to be talking about that. What kinds of help and or assistance might we need? How do we gaze into the future without really knowing what it holds? And so we want to talk about some of those what-ifs in coming weeks. Well, we think that is a great conversation to have. All right, so today, Franco Modigliani, Nobel Memorial Prize in Economics, 1985, was a prof at the University of Illinois.
Where?
Heidi's alma mater.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Carnegie Mellon and MIT Sloan School of Management. He wrote this in March 30 of 2000, New York Times, when the stock market internet bubble had just popped and obliterated much of market valuation. And here he says this: I can show really precisely that there are two warranted prices for a share. Two warranted prices. The one I prefer is based on such fundamentals as earnings and growth rates, but the bubble is rational in a certain sense. The expectation of growth produces the growth, which confirms the expectation. People would buy it because it's going up, vis-a-vis NVIDIA. Now, I'm not knocking them by any means. But once you are convinced it's not growing anymore, nobody wants to hold the stock because it is overvalued. Everybody wants to get out of it, and it collapses beyond the fundamentals. Well, there's a certain amount of truth in that. As this growth that we're experiencing just puts in detail, sometimes some people would say gory detail. I mean, how far is this thing going to run? That's what everybody wants to know now. You know, is this AI thing for real? Well, just look up Boston Dynamics on YouTube, and you'll see whether or not it's for real.
What will we see there?
You will see their dog.
Spot.
Able to flip over now, or before he was just running along. Yeah, and they're also seeing the challenge of using the hardware and having it be, if you will, intuitive enough to handle decision making.
He's like a robot dog?
A robot dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looks a little different than a real dog. So.
A little.
Not quite as furry.
Moving on.
On the breed. Yeah.
That doesn't bark. Dr. John Hussman on 8/15/2025. That most people would say that was last week or so. 10 days plus. Week and a half. Writes, neither the market collapse that followed the peak of the tech bubble in 2000 nor the crisis that followed the mortgage bubble in 2007 were particularly unusual in terms of the issues that followed those extremes. Well, they were particularly unusual. 2007 was brutal. The market was at 14,000. It then moved on through March of 2009 to lose more than 50% of its value. Mm. The notable thing is that both were obedient. History has rarely afforded bubbles a lifespan of more than a decade, and neither the tech bubble nor the mortgage bubble that followed it were exceptions to this rule. When investors drive valuations higher without simultaneously, and this, listen, please.
Yes.
Are we listening? Please, class.
We are listening.
This is good. Without simultaneously adjusting their expectations for future returns lower. Dennis, is that rocket science? Did you tell me something I didn't already know? No. For some of you, no, not at all. But it is a good reminder nonetheless, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. That is, investors extrapolate past returns based on price behavior. Even though the resulting expectations about future returns are inconsistent with the returns that would equate price with discounted cash flows. What did he say again? I don't know. You know what? So what they're saying is that the price can get ahead of its actual value. Yes. Now, case in point. Are we currently in an AI tech bubble? I don't know, but look at this, says Rob, our own economist. And this is some great info here. NVIDIA, Microsoft, and Apple now make up over 21% of the S&P 500.
Jeez.
The highest weighting for any three stocks in the S&P 500 on record. On record. So how far back does this go? Now, I've already told them, so they can't answer the question.
Yeah, so they can't answer. That would be cheating.
But what would be a great guess? How far back does the S&P 500 go? When was it incepted?
1915.
Later, not that early.
Yeah, not that early. Yeah. That's
314 of 57.
57.
1957. Now, its beginnings start go back to 1923. Beginnings. So,
but you said Microsoft, Apple, and NVIDIA make up 21% of the S&P 500. And yeah. I would have guessed they were with NASDAQ. I thought we thought NASDAQ was like the tech companies.
It is tech. But the S&P 500 can be inclusive of that.
Okay.
They're not exclusive to each other.
Got it.
They can be in more than one index.
They're not mutually exclusive.
But out of 500 companies, right, S&P is 500 companies?
It is 500.
Three of them make up 21%.
Tend to be leading in your industry. Well, three make up 21% of the valuation.
Yeah.
Now, the 38% combined weighting of the 10 largest U.S. stocks in the index is also at a record high. The 10 largest U.S. stocks make up 38% of the S&P 500. 38%. For now, the boom most likely has room to run, says Rob. Now, most likely. Circle that for compliance purposes. Thank you very much. The introduction of AI into the workplace and society. Now, listen to this. This is another really interesting quote. Matches both the rollout of electricity and the internet. Did electricity make any difference to us?
A slight difference, I believe.
Thank you. This is from Morgan Stanley. Has anyone heard of Morgan Stanley?
Yeah.
They're not small. And it estimates that capital expenditure on AI infrastructure, another really interesting take. Dennis, you're so interesting this morning, at least in your own mind. On AI infrastructure will reach $3 trillion through 2028. Most people would say that's 3 years. Not long. Microsoft, Alphabet, Meta, and Amazon are leading the charge with startups like Anthropic and Elon Musk's XAI piling in, but the digital gold rush won't last forever. Okay?
It will not.
It will not. So, you know, already they're talking about overbuilding of data centers. They're going to want to see earnings coming out from this AI craze. And we're not there yet. As Scott Bessent says with the Treasury, I think he's with Treasury, isn't he? He's with the Trump administration. Who is he anyway? He says he thinks we'll begin seeing earnings coming in January of 26.
Earnings for
accentuated
what?
From AI. Given the efficiencies.
Well, earnings coming in January from what?
AI.
I thought
and its impact on the economy. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Does that make more sense? Yeah. Okay, great. Now, next up is Nathan. Why security could be a durable investment theme.
That's right. And this article comes to us from Capital Group. So their first point is national security, a wave of defense spending. Armed conflict inevitably has tragic consequences, starting with the human cost of lives lost and populations displaced, as well as economic repercussions on all sides. The wars in Ukraine and Gaza, and more recently, the hostilities in Iran, have underscored these realities. But they have also reinforced the importance of robust defensive resources. Leaders in Europe, Japan, and other countries are recognizing the need to invest in their own defense. And we're seeing some of those differences. So NATO allies pledged in June to ramp up their defense spending from a targeted 2% of gross domestic product to 5% by 2035.
And by the way, have you seen the hand-wringing from some of the foreign press on how much these They had to increase their spending to satisfy the Trump administration. It was just funny to read. They just aren't entirely happy about it, apparently.
So Trump is out of office in 2028.
Yes. Is he out of office then? Is it then? No, but, I'm just kidding. Kidding. I promise.
So they say we'll get to 5% of GDP by 2035.
Right.
Once Trump's gone, they can.
Who's to hold their feet to
the
fire?
See if they follow through. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That remains to be seen, given the changing political winds.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. But either way, that is a monumental change that reflects an ongoing transformation of the geopolitical landscape. This spending agreement advanced by the U.S. administration signifies a major turning point over the 80-year-old alliance. Even before the NATO agreement, defense spending was on an upward trajectory. European and Canadian defense budgets rose 18% in 2024. In the first quarter of 2025, Germany disclosed plans for aggressive fiscal stimulus focused primarily on defense and infrastructure. Outside of NATO, Japan's cabinet approved a 9.4% increase in its defense budget in December of 2024.
And if I may inject, given the recent attacks Russia has just done against Ukraine, I would bet most European leaders are glad that they're increasing their defense spending, and I would bet increasing percentages of their population are in agreement with it. Absolutely.
You know, in The Graduate, when they said plastics is the future, drones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's
drones,
crazy, isn't it?
Military drones, that's the future.
Mm-hmm. So defense stocks have already surged. As of July 16th, the S&P Europe Defense Vision Index and S&P Aerospace and Defense Select Industry Index have climbed 75.6% and 29.7%, respectively, for the year. Valuations, as Dennis was alluding to earlier, have become stretched with the substantial run-up in stock prices. So we're seeing that perhaps across more than just the defense sector of the stock market right now as well.
Right. Yeah.
So Capital Group believes rising defense budgets represent a long-term tailwind, but only for those innovators that can adapt to a rapidly evolving landscape. Additionally, ships have become another priority, and we've been sizing up opportunities in Asia. Although U.S. companies produce cutting-edge defense systems, America faces challenges of its own in modernizing its naval fleet and may need to look abroad for some solutions.
Yeah, because we can't build ships anymore. Apparently, we don't have the technology or the capability or the people or whatever it is. We don't have it.
Yeah. In recent trade negotiations with South Korea, shipbuilders Hyundai Heavy Industries and Hanwha Ocean have offered to move some operations to the States and help the U.S. revitalize its production capabilities. Other leading shipbuilding companies are domiciled in Asia, include Japanese conglomerates Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and Kawasaki Heavy Industries, both of which also make gas turbines and other power generation equipment. So the second point is energy security, the lifeblood of any economy. Secure access to energy is essential to a functioning economy and a matter of national security. Germany and other European nations learned this the hard way when they were cut off from access to cheap natural gas after Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There are stark regional differences in energy resources, so the U.S., Europe, and Asia face differing challenges. The U.S. shale fracking industry is in a relatively enviable position, providing the country with an abundance of cheap natural gas and oil. The availability of affordable energy provides a range of U.S. manufacturers with a distinct competitive advantage, since energy is one of the highest input costs for many companies. What's more, the U.S. transitioned from a net importer to a net exporter of energy in October of 2019.
Now, this stunned me. Honestly, I'd forgotten this.
Yeah.
October of 19.
Yeah. And today, it ranks as the world's largest crude oil producer at 12 million barrels of oil per day.
Not bad. And talk about timing. It could not be better, given the increasing stratospheric increase need for energy, electrification.
That's correct, yeah. So for the first time in years, power demand is rising rapidly in the U.S., thanks to the construction of AI data centers and the reshoring of manufacturing. To meet the demand, companies are increasingly exploring the use of nuclear energy, a trend that could bring attention to once staid utility companies. And their final point, supply chain security. The COVID pandemic exposed the fragility of supply chains, as well as the importance of companies and governments building their resilience with a range of suppliers. Today, amid growing geopolitical and trade conflicts, the emphasis is on securing supply chains for essential goods like semiconductors, critical minerals, and metals.
So metals.
Copper, for example. So nations recognize the need to secure access to the metal, given its central role in data centers, grid modernization, and other industrial needs.
It's basic industrial components.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Demand is expected to generate shortages in key locations in Chile and elsewhere in South America. And China is a key producer of critical minerals.
Cobalt, graphite, lithium, manganese, nickel, rare earth minerals.
Mm-hmm. Western nations are taking action to try to bolster manufacturing in their markets and secure access to vital commodities and products. Most notably, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act provides incentives for companies bringing manufacturing to the U.S. Potential beneficiaries include builders of industrial machinery, heating and ventilation system providers, drug makers, semiconductor companies, and technology firms. So the bottom line is there are long runways of growth potential.
Long run what?
Long runways of growth.
Runways, potential. Okay, yep. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Government spending commitments and other tailwinds are combining to generate a second wave of growth potential for well-positioned industries and defense firms. We believe this is a durable theme that should spur corporate spending and perhaps lead to a broadening in the stock market, which has been dominated by mega-cap tech stocks. Companies that offer leading products across a range of government priorities stand to benefit the most. They include providers of goods in multiple categories, including power generation, grid modernization, and defense systems.
I'm telling you, isn't that interesting just reading the insights from research geeks?
Yeah.
And that's why, as Nathan was reading this, I was thinking, it's equally as important now to have good research within your portfolio that you can count on over time. We don't know, obviously, what direction the market is heading, but good research applied over time, used and profited from, what a difference it can make to helping you diversify your portfolio and improve your rate of returns. So you can retire, stay retired, not always a guarantee, but also then maybe even pass some on to the little ones running around in the yard. Those are the key components of continuing to be as responsible of any of us as any of us want to be in terms of helping keep ahead of inflation and helping grow our own portfolios.
One comment, somebody said, my sources say U.S. defense spending last few years between 3 and 3.5%. And it is down about there, but it's higher than the European nations. Remember, Europe has said we'll commit to 5%, by 2034? You know, mm-hmm.
2035,
years.
Yeah, that is a key warning right there, Ron. Let's go back to that graph.
The graph.
Which no one can
see. We need to be spending much more as a percent of our GDP on defense spending. Yeah, we're not spending nearly enough to maintain our freedoms.
The graph that we're looking at goes back to the 50s when we were spending 11% of our GDP on defense.
Now, am I saying we need to go to 11? No, but we should at least be over 5. Historically, any nation that maintains its freedoms, I believe that number needs to be over 5%. Now, that was from a few weeks or months ago, I was reading that. But yeah, we're not spending enough. We're not, to keep our freedoms. All right? Well, Heidi, why I see opportunity in the mass market.
Yes, this is an article, again, from Capital Group or American Funds, and this was written by Matt Hochstetler, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And he is an equity portfolio manager, and he was educated at Harvard and Georgetown. And just like Nathan was talking to us about the opportunities to be found in the national security and defense areas as maybe a future place to look at investing in, Matt chooses to see significant opportunity investing in companies that cater to mass market consumers, including folks struggling to make every dollar count. Now, he concedes that it may not be as exciting as artificial intelligence, but he thinks it could be just as rewarding for the investor who prefers to invest in companies that make products that they use every day. So more of a domestic angle is what we're looking at. He observes that there is a long-term investment opportunity in this area because of recent developments that are generating some powerful tailwinds. And low-income workers are seeing strong wage growth, and that is one thing that he is pointing out. So his first point is that the working class wages are moving higher, and we have seen this. Since COVID-19 pandemic, low-income employees have enjoyed the largest wage increases by far compared to any other income group, including the highest earners. As companies struggled to find employees during and after the pandemic, U.S. workers in the lowest income category earning an average wage of around $14.26 an hour saw a 15% increase in pay from 2019 to 2024. That's more than double the average five-year wage growth among other income groups. So these numbers are adjusted for inflation, just in case you were wondering. And inflation, remember, hit a 40-year high of 9.1% in the summer of 2022. So that's been taken into consideration. Of course, this doesn't mean that low-wage workers are suddenly riding high on the economic spectrum. For decades, they've gotten the short end of the stick, and they had been losing ground on an inflation-adjusted basis. But low-wage workers now have more discretionary income, and where they spend that money may and will play an important factor or an important part in the health of the U.S. economy.
Who would have thought? I mean, right out of left field. I mean, this is some really interesting numbers. And not that it's, going to really excite anyone to really hear this. It's still great information in terms of what it could mean or how these portfolio people are making a difference.
So, well, Matt saw evidence of all of this because during the second quarter of 2025, the U.S. economy grew by 3% on an annualized basis, largely due to the strong consumer spending. Although hiring has slowed, the U.S. employment rate has gone up. It remains low by historical standards at 4.2%. That's a tight labor market by any measure, which bodes well for future wage growth.
In spite of what most news organizations would tell you, now we're not lumping Ron into that, but the national news organizations tend to feed on negativity. And, of course, this is not negative. Yeah. All right, go ahead, Heidi.
All right, so another contributing factor that Matt points out is our tax policy is providing support. So that big, a beautiful bill that we've all been talking about over several weeks, in that bill, income taxes were lowered or eliminated in several key areas. That includes the no tax on tips deduction, which could boost the incomes of hotel and restaurant workers who often fall into the lower wage categories. Matt expects federal income taxes to remain low for middle and low income Americans, but he does believe that at some point, taxes on the wealthy will rise as lawmakers attempt to deal with the record high budget deficits and long-term debt burden now approaching $37 trillion. And that is something that we hear a lot in the economic sector. As you look at things, we have to remember that we do have that large budget deficit out there, and that is going to impact things going forward in the future. So Matt's third point is that the minimum wage is on the rise. So by 2027, nearly half the U.S. population will live in states with a minimum wage of $15 or more, which made me think back when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I think I earned $3.25 an hour at McDonald's. Mm. A little higher these days. So he is also hopeful that the ongoing reshoring trend, returning manufacturing activity to the U.S., will create more jobs for Americans in the semiconductor, pharmaceutical, and industrial sectors. The U.S. probably won't be returning to its day as a manufacturing powerhouse, but even a modest increase in the manufacturing-related jobs could have a big impact on putting additional upward pressure on wages.
It's pretty interesting. We sat with John Sluice yesterday, and he said the two most significant tax breaks went for workers who were earning overtime or had overtime pay, as well as tip income. He said those were the two biggies.
He's a CPA.
He is, mm-hmm. Indeed.
Yes, he is.
And he'll be joining us in September. Is that correct, Beth?
It is, yes.
So. Who else makes money, a decent portion of their income with tips, like hairdressers and barbers?
Yep, that would be true.
And I'm not sure about barbers, but
not that barber, yeah.
You don't tip your barber, huh?
I tip my barber.
So do I.
But I just don't picture that as being a significant increase.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I know I don't have to visit nearly as often as I once did, so yeah, the tips are few and far between.
You got to tip double now.
Go ahead, Heidi.
All right, so Matt's final point here is mass market companies are rising to the occasion. There are many publicly traded companies that cater to the mass market consumers, including some that make an effort to serve customers living on a tight budget. So those selling products and services that get the job done and remain affordable for budget-minded folks is where he sees value in the future for investments. Reasonable prices maintain a loyal customer base, particularly in the areas that are neglected by the retail giants. So he says you can look for those regional type opportunities to invest in those kind of companies that offer those products. And so what his end result, or what is his conclusion here? He says, I believe the working class is the heartbeat of the American economy, and if they succeed, we all succeed because of what they will bring to the economic side of the U.S.
Hear, hear. Amen to that. Mm-hmm. I love it. I agree wholeheartedly. You bet.
A couple of quick comments. We talked about defense spending in the 50s in the U.S. was 11% of GDP. Someone said, remember the Korean War in the 50s, the Vietnam War 60s and 70s. One reason defense spending was up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the largest copper deposit in the USA just might be the pre-1982 copper pennies that were 95% copper. So many people now have in coffee cans in their closets.
Yeah, that's the continuing degradation of our own currency. And there's a term for that. I can't think of it right now, but that's a great example of that. That the metals themselves within the coins become worth more than the coin.
What are we doing now, gang?
Well, I have a little tidbit to tell you about. This comes to us from the Thinking Advisor magazine, and Ed Slott was recently interviewed by that magazine. And one thing I just wanted to point out is, we've talked about this before, but Ed Slott says, never waste a low tax bracket. Always pay taxes at the lowest rates. That's it. It's that simple, Slott said to the magazine. You will always pay not at the rates, but at your rates. Because rates can be high, but your rates personally, because of deductions, could be low. Or rates could be low, but your rate is higher because you had a business or personal opportunity that may have paid off. So always pay at your lowest rates, even if that means, and here's the part that gets people, even if it means paying tax before it's required. So Ed observes people don't like to pay a tax before they have to. Many people have this minimum mentality. I call it, they focus on RMDs, required minimum distributions, which means I am not touching my IRA till they make me take it out, screaming and kicking, and force me to take it out at age 73. But then look at all the years of low tax rates that you blew. You never want to waste a low tax bracket. So what he's talking about there, and I think Dennis would agree, is if you're in like a 12% bracket, you could fill that bracket up by maybe a Roth conversion or something like that and pay the tax now at that low rate in exchange for avoiding a higher rate in the future.
For getting a lower rate in the future, potentially. Okay, check. For getting a lower rate in the future and potentially at zero. Zero could well be your hero there.
Yep.
Great point.
Ed says the best tax planning means saving the most in a lifetime, and beneficiary taxes come down to that as well. So beneficiaries should be looking at these kind of decisions as well. So the key is to focus on the long term and your plan and your tax situation and make the most of what's available.
It's key. You'll save a lot more in taxes than a percent or whatever that you pay your financial advisor on a yearly basis. It can be significant in terms of tax savings and the real dollars. Now, next is Beth Shire with the stats.
Yes, first we have from the U.S. Labor, U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the July Consumer Price Index increased by 0.2%, bringing the 12-month average to 2.7%. The primary factor driving the increase was shelter, which rose by 0.2% in July. And the producer price index for final demand rose by 0.9% in July after remaining unchanged in June. This brings the 12-month average from August 2024 through July 25 to 3.3%, which is the largest 12-month increase since February of 25.
Point of clarification.
Sure.
Sometimes we hear these numbers and they don't seem very big, like 0.2%, but
right.
That's for 1 month. Then would it be proper to times multiply that by 12 to get a kind of an estimate on an annual figure?
No.
Because
1 month can be an anomaly,
yeah.
An anomalous
that's
sort
true.
Of thing. You know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was a good try, though.
But often when they do have stats, they'll say 0.2% compared to last August.
Right.
Or
right.
They'll give you the annual figure. Okay.
Yeah, it seems infinitesimal, mm-hmm. but it does add up,
yeah.
of course.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And then according to Reuters, Google has agreed to pay a $35.8 million fine to Australia after the consumer watchdog uncovered that the company hurt competition by paying the two largest telcos to pre-install its search application on Android phones.
Did the stock price feel that at all? The answer? No. Not one iota.
$35 million isn't a lot for Google.
No,
that is just
not.
Incredible.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Yep.
President Trump met with Russian President Vladimir Putin on August 15th of this year in Alaska, which is the first time Putin has been on U.S. soil since 2015, his visit with President Obama. That's
oh, that's
USA
radical.
Today.
I didn't realize
that's
it had been
10 years,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
He's had a lot going on.
Yeah,
I guess so.
Yes.
And then from Market Briefs, Private real estate deals have seen four straight quarters of growth after a downturn since 2022. Private real estate deals are funded by investors, not banks. Lending standards have gotten looser, which is a sign of confidence, and experts are hopeful that this is pointing to a long-term rebound in private lending.
Wow. Yeah, I just, because Google is the point of conversation, I just looked at what it was in the April low, and it was in the range of $150. Mm-hmm. Today, as of August, let's see, what is it, August 28th? It's at about 211, 210, 211. Not a bad increase from April.
Mm-hmm. What was it in April?
$150.
Okay, so, all right.
So it's up approximately $60. And then if you take 60 and divide it by 150, that is...
Well, I need lights. I can't see it.
40%.
40% increase.
Yeah.
Yeah. So April, that was right after the Liberation Day announcement when the stocks kind of crashed.
When all the tariff threats were coming out in terms of it's going to have a real detrimental impact.
So if you hung in there, or if you, what do they say, buy the dip. It was up 40%.
I love what Will Rogers said. It was just really prescient, I thought. Do you know what he said?
What did he say?
Buy a stock. When it goes up, sell it. If it doesn't go up, don't buy it.
Buy low, sell high.
Just make it simple.
Right. Somebody wrote that they've noticed some local retailers now have nickels along with the pennies in the cashier's penny tray.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so just pennies are being phased out. Someone also sent us a nice photograph of a huge jug full of pennies.
Wow, that's a good one.
Yeah, for those concerned about currency devaluation, remember, silver and gold still. Silver and gold. Now, the prices can be very volatile in those sorts of assets, but, just a heads up, they can remain a great hedge against currency devaluation, given the conversation we're just having about it.
We're ready to wrap up. We did have a last-minute text. Somebody said, check out the GE Vernova stock, which closed at it's at 642 right now on August 28th. Said a year ago, it was at, 194. So anyway, it's up 250% almost.
It's nuts. 200 to 640.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's technology going on.
All right.
Yeah, wild stuff, hell.
By 10:58 at WTCM, I guess we'll wrap it up. ProutFinancialDesign.com. For everything you need related to what was said today and what wasn't said, it's all there at proutfinancialdesign.com.
Thanks, Ron.
All right, Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Nathan Prout, Beth Shire, thank you all.
Thanks, Ron.